It's Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances and save an additional $1,000 when you buy four select LG major appliances. Plus, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 5-amp-hour battery when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max tool. Get the job done for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/26. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for more details and qualifying items.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
The responsibility that the people do not endorse judicial impunity. The judges must be held accountable. That abuse of office cannot be tolerated. And judges must know that having been elevated to that position, there is an equally a huge responsibility placed on their shoulders.
But if you look at this case on the whole, their discretion not fettered by this kind of thing? Fettered not in a positive, in a negative sense, that a CJ will be careful because however the decision they take administratively, somebody will be aggrieved and that may be used against them.
So that's where the rules and procedures come in. That's where they come in. Is it consistent with the rules? Have I taken a decision to circumvent the rules? Why have I circumvented the rules? Why have I circumvented the procedure?
There's a travel policy, she's not the first, a travel policy of 2019 that they have all used, okay? But I suppose those who went to testify for her testify to the effect that it's a travel policy we have all been using. And if they use, and it says, if you are traveling outside of the country, foreign travel, it is with your security alone. But they decided to replace the security with somebody else that they are comfortable with. Suddenly, she uses it and she's in trouble.
When has repeated mistakes been considered as experience? If you have been doing that and it's wrong, it's wrong. The fact that you have been doing it doesn't validate what you have been doing. You get it? I mean, if an ordinary public servant had done that, there's such a type of public servant.
As a chief justice, you will transfer judges for one reason or the other. As a chief justice, you will fix cases. So here she's accused, Sam, there was a delay, or she has said that they can't file a particular application here in Accra, it has to go to Koforidua, and Afenyo Makin brings his case the same day within 2 hours. She has empaneled the court. Meanwhile, we say we want speed. And she says she was doing this in respect of the election petition rules that she was championing for speed. So if they bring a matter as sensitive as that from Parliament, and within 2 hours, the CJ is able to constitute a panel, shouldn't she be praised for it rather than now be crucified for that decision?
But how does an abuse of office of a justice of the Superior Court of Judicature manifest itself? How does it manifest itself? Isn't a transfer procedure? if there are no legitimate grounds on which to transfer a judge, or if the judge believes that by virtue of the case he's handling, or you have an interest in the case, that's why you've transferred him or her, then you found misconduct. I mean, how does it, Samson, how does it manifest itself? How do you expect the generality of Ghanaians to understand how a case can be expeditiously heard within 5 hours, okay, when another case has not even been programmed for hearing for the whole term of parliament? How do you explain that way? So these are matters, and again, coming back to what Mami said, these are the matters that oblige us as Ghanaians to hold justices to the highest standard of proper human conduct. Because, you see, justice must not only be seen to be done, but it must be manifestly be seen to be done. Now, this case, and I heard you referring copiously to the petition and the addresses and whatnot, I have no qualms with what you are doing, because the matter has been pronounced upon.
That's right.
Okay. Now, see, when you look at the crafting and design, the architecture of the Constitution from 1969, it appears to me that the moral compass of the people of Ghana with regards to Article 146 was vested in some institutions. That's why we were asked not to pry into what those institutions were doing. Now, it appears to me that the policy rationale for the in-camera hearing has been under serious challenge and attack in the matter of the Chief Justice. And we don't know where this will lead us to. Because when you did the case of Charlotte, Loretta Lamte, we believed that the Chief Justice, in determining that a prima facie case had been done, had acted bona fide. We also believed that the committee that recommended the removal of Loretta Lamte had reasons to believe that she was a person otherwise unfit to occupy that office. We never questioned the rationale. Because the moral compass was vested in the committee. The standards vested in the committee. Just like the case of Larry Bibi's assistant. Insubordination. The committee set up under Article 146 came to the conclusion that the insubordination exhibited by the subordinate of Larry Bibi was weighty enough to constitute misbehavior. Today, we have important de minimis, important triviality, and challenging the moral compass of a committee established under Article 146. And so, we are removing the veneer. This is not only dangerous, but might lead us into uncharted waters.
You're still here on Newsfile. This is your most authoritative news analysis platform, and here on Newsfile, we put Ghana first, and we programmed it in a way that you will learn and be edified at the end. Now, let me bring on Nanai J. Bafowa. So, what's your take on the conclusions, the substance that have led to the removal of the CJ? And do you also join that argument that she's removed as CJ, but not as a justice of the Supreme Court, as a letter from the presidency said, remove from both, and some have indicted that?
Thompson, standards are predetermined. They are not ad hoc. And so if we are going to hold our Chief Justice and justices of the Superior Court to standards, there should be a set standard which are predetermined or predefined. Samson, what is stated misbehavior is still not known. Here is the case where I think that my colleagues have been confusing embezzlement and so on and so forth. How do you say this is embezzlement? in the case where the Chief Justice is not the spending officer, there's a procedure she herself has to apply for funds to be disbursed to her. There's a procedure by which that application goes to. The people in the chain, right, have responded to audit query, and the auditors found the explanation acceptable. How do you call this embezzlement? By no stretch of imagination, you can't call this embezzlement. In any event, what is the procedure for determining impropriety of expenditure in the public sector? That procedure is the audit by the Auditor General. And the Auditor General found no wrong with this subsequent to the management explanation to the queries that were raised. And so where is the wrongdoing? What is the basis for this? In Brightfield versus NTHC, it is clear, the law is clear. When an enactment makes provision for a procedure for taking a step, it is that procedure alone which should be complied with. And in the public space, it is the Auditor General whose work it is to establish propriety or otherwise of an expenditure. And so where is the wrongdoing? How does she commit an error for applying a going through procedure to obtain expenses? I think that the decision is so embarrassing, to say the least. And so, yes, let's hold our public office holders, let's hold our judges, let's hold our Chief Justice to a higher standard, but the standard ought to be defined. Now, in the case of the transfer, how do you say that a Chief Justice, who has been given the discretion under our law to transfer cases, to allocate cases, to assign cases to a judge, commits an offense for doing so? And then you say that, look, I'm not surprised that they said that the transfer of the staff of the judicial service is contrary to Article 296, clause A and B, because they can't even point to an established regulation that frowns on the transfer. In the absence of a regulation that frowns on the transfer, how do you say that the exercise of that power is arbitrary, is unfair, is capricious?
They find, what shall I say? They don't see the mere transfer or the mere assignment. For example, when they brought in the petitioner himself and the cases he was involved in, you know, at a point, the petitioner had got the Supreme Court to prohibit, you know, Justice Stockholm, who was not a Supreme Court judge then, to prohibit her from handling the petitioner's case. And then she becomes Chief Justice and still has to do the assignment because that's her job. And she does them, and they say that they find ways to say that the way she did the assignment is like she looked for favorable judges who give judgments the way she had also done against the petitioner. You know, that's how they weave it around.
The findings of the committee is even an affront to judicial independence. The independence of judges to determine cases outside of any influence. So when the CJ assigns a case to a judge, because of the independence nature of the judiciary, right, is expected to determine the case pursuant to his judicial oath without any influence or, you know, any sort of pressure. And so if we don't have such confidence in judges and think that they can all be influenced, then where do we find ourselves? So the finding itself is an affront to judicial independence.
Okay, so now we have to be sure if there's a particular finding about this, about transfer of cases and assignment of cases, like Aikoto had cautioned earlier. But you see, I'm asking myself, I was asking Inus Afuseni questions, and she was nodding in agreement and speaking in agreement that, you know, the way Charlotte Osei's process went. Do you remember how they vehemently protested, you know, that process? But now, because it has happened the other way, he can use that to rationalize what has happened to the CJ.
Look, you see, I wouldn't want to do false equivalence. I don't want to do false equivalence. If Charlotte Osei was wrong yesterday, it doesn't make what the CJ has gone through right. We have to be careful. If it is false, they are settling, because they keep making reference to Charlotte Osei. If it is false, let everybody know that we are settling scores. It looks like that is what they want to do. If it is false that the MPP did it to Charlotte Osei, so we also want to do it to the Chief Justice, then we know it is score settling. But Samson, I don't want to engage in score settling.
Okay.
Samson, I want us to move on as a country where our democracy becomes stronger. Right? You see, everything points to the fact that what has happened is wrong. Mr. Aikoyotu, my honorable senior, pointed to evidence that shows that the allegations have already been dealt with by the Auditor General in respect of the financial impropriety. Deliberately, they keep making reference to embezzlement.
I don't think embezzlement is the word that has featured
anywhere.
It's financial impropriety. It's financial impropriety.
With the greatest respect, I use embezzlement as an example of criminal offenses that proceed from financial misappropriation.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Well, then you compare apples with oranges. I'm saying that this is this is financial impropriety.
Absolutely.
And the Auditor General is the institution, the Auditor General is the person mandated to deal with it. The Auditor General has dealt with it. Can this be a ground for the removal of the Chief Justice? Is the committee an audit committee? In any event, the committee, look, I agree with Mr.
So the committee didn't seek to do an audit. What they sought to do was to understand the policy, that was relied on.
The interruption has not allowed me to flow. And I don't think you've been fair to me in that regard. Please, let me put that on right.
I think when you misquote me and misassign things to me, I'm entitled to correct it. I did not accuse the CJ of embezzlement. In response to a question whether she
was a
court judge, and I merely said ordinary citizens may be brought before the Supreme Court for embezzlement. I did not say the CJ had embezzlement.
The president's power.
If you're going to quote me, please do
that with the Council of State.
Quoting me correctly.
Mami, thank you. Thank you for your intervention. You set the record straight in that regard. Nana, go on.
The President's power to look into this matter together with the Council of State was invoked by the petition. The committee's power to look into this was invoked by the President's determination of the existence of a prima facie case. And the president forwarded, supposedly, the prima facie case composition of the petition to the committee to look into it. That is where the committee's jurisdiction commenced. Now, instead of dealing with everything and reporting to the president, you have dealt with just one. And now you have told the president you are going to deal with the rest. How are you going to deal with the rest? That tells you the poor nature of the work that has been done by the committee.
So the statement by the committee, they say that they will report on the other two. I don't know whether the report means they are going to continue to sit on the other two.
That tells you the poor nature of it.
Mm.
It tells you that they didn't do a comprehensive work because the prima facie involved their jurisdiction to deal with the prima facie part of the complaint before them. Now, we don't have a complete work, and they are going to report. Report how? Look, my brother, there's something we need to appreciate. People have said that, yes, the president has done a very good work because Article 146 has been complied with. Article 146 is not in isolation. Article 146, by implication, reference other provisions of our laws that must be complied with. Right? When it comes to prima facie determination, it is not in isolation. Prima facie is not defined in the Constitution.
Okay.
Prima facie is defined in the Evidence Act. It tells you the nature and effect of the prima facie. And so you cannot take the box in Article 146 and not take the box in the Evidence Act. Then when it comes to the hearing itself, you need to comply with the rules of evidence. The rules of fair hearing, also in the Constitution, particularly Article 23 and 296 of the Constitution, were all these complied with. When the Chief Justice in the process feels aggrieved by one step or the other, she has every right to seek redress in court, which is why she went to court under Article 1, Clause 2 of the Constitution.
Okay.
You see something, when the Chief Justice invokes the jurisdiction, the human rights jurisdiction of our court, and she's told that the court doesn't have jurisdiction, something, when you put all these things together, when you say the Chief Justice has been granted justice, we know the whole system was very unfair to her, and my concern is going forward. We are done with this. I think that we should be very interested in building a stronger constitution.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Nana. So we had extra time. We have just 10 minutes of that left. We don't actually have all the 10 minutes. But what I did with you was to give you, you know, a blank check when we started and you had sufficient time. But can you, in 1 minute, if you want to say something after having heard everybody else say that, then my guest will take about a minute each or so to say something about what happened in Akwetia. Kweku Bako Jr., Abdul Malik Kweku Bako, says that, you remember we contended that the Public Procurement Act should have been the first port of call, assuming without admitting there was a case to answer by Charlotte Osei. So he was my client. We took the case to the Supreme Court. And he says, what happened to Charlotte Osei was wrong-headed. Admission of that is not an engagement in, quote, false equivalence, end quote, respectfully. So that's one thing I like about him. He was principled at the time and said, let's not do it this way, it's wrong. Today, he says, this is wrong. You can't take it away from him. Right. So, Ms. Akwetu, what do you have to say in a minute so we can move on? Do we have Ms. Akwetu on the line? Okay, it's taking a while, so... Oh, okay, okay. All right, so we understand you have just a little problem, so let's proceed. Yeah, let's proceed. Were you surprised at the turnout in Akwetia?
No, I was not surprised at all. I knew that there's going to be a challenge. But many things worked for us. The MPP now is in disarray. Yeah, that's their default status. Okay.
They snatched the seat by 2,000 votes.
Yes, because they had no campaign.
They say you were buying the votes.
We were not buying the votes.
You were intimidating.
Tell me their campaign. What did they go there to say? They haven't defined one campaign message they give to the people.
Secondly, I mean, this is a party that has been touted as a party of the intelligentsia. And then they feel that I'm saying against a lawyer. What do you expect the people of Akutia to do?
They went and failed as someone who is in mining. We cannot say now that it's a galamseya, please. Yes.
So I said, I don't, this attempt to repair the image of that person.
No, no, no.
Deadly,
if a suit comes here, you won't be there to defend us. So please.
Thirdly, this is a party that has been known to deepen internal democracy. So look, let's offer everybody who wants to contest an opportunity to win the confidence of the delegates. I mean, because the delegates are those who are going to campaign in the various branches for you to win. But what do? They went and imposed a candidate, constituency, that worked against them. Fourthly, MPP has been known to traditionally be taking their candidates from Niwonchi. That's their stronghold. This time they decided to depart from that and went to Bodia. The guy did not do well. He did not win that community. Fifthly, they put money over propriety. They said, look, because he's a minor, he can fund his own campaign. So let's put him there. And not a candidate, actually, who will adequately represent the people. Mm. Our message was simple. For us, I mean, we already have two-thirds majority, so it was not about two-thirds majority.
Mm.
It was, what are the development challenges of Akutia? And they do have me. Who best
started doing the charade that we see every by-election? You started working on their roads, and, you know, showing signs that you work on that. I'm sure by now they've
but you don't work. In the Asin North, you didn't see the government doing roads in Asin North. You didn't see it in the by-election.
Yeah.
But the people of Akutia, I mean, Asin North vote for the MPP. We went there with a solid campaign.
Okay, that's the point. Right. So, the accusation also has been that you guys imposed a candidate, and that was bad for you. In preparing for this, I went to read my Ghanaian Odyssey, Professor Ajumabafo's book that he wrote in 2012. I actually bought my copy in November 2012. And he had blamed you guys, the Akufo-Addo's first loss, on the imposition of candidates. So you don't seem to have learned. Why did you impose a candidate? Didn't that affect you? You don't think so?
Samson, we went to an election. Unfortunately, we lost. We'll do our post-mortem analysis of it and come out better. I mean, the decision to impose or pick one candidate is something that we considered internally to be the most appropriate at that point. We have lost. It didn't work. I mean, not everything decision you make work. It's not work. We'll go back and evaluate and, you know what to do in the future.
Hmm. We are looking for a strong opposition, a position that can hold the foot of the government to the fire. Yeah.
Yes, we agree. A strong opposition is necessary for a stronger democracy and development. We agree. It's not the first time a political party has been in this shape in this country. In the year 2000, NDC was in a very terrible shape.
Mm.
We said they were never coming back to power again. We said it in the year 2001. I remember some comments that were made by the venerable, the distinguished G.H. Mensah himself, right? But after two terms, the Ghanaian people brought the NDC back. In 2016, we said the NDC wasn't come back again, given the defeat, the loss they experienced, they suffered. But Ghanaians gave them another opportunity.
Mm.
So okay. It is always the case.
Okay.
So we are going to put our house in order.
Mm.
Ghanaians taught us a lesson. We are learning in humility. We'll come back.
Right. And I'm sure, Oliver, you were thinking, Musa Dankwa, he roasted because things didn't appear to look the way he predicted things, you know? I mean, to be honest, I think that a lot of us particularly are interested in understanding our elections and how they go. And so the fact that there's an element of scientificity and credibility to Musa's post, that all of us were holding our breath, you know? But the truth is, even in terms of the standards we're holding Mr. Dankwa, polls everywhere, there's sometimes there are slippages. And it seems like in this case, we're not even allowing any margin of error. But I was very surprised with the polls that came out. I didn't think that was possible. So all throughout, I was more interested in the poll question than even in terms of what the parties were doing on the ground. And I'm amazed. I think that it's something that we need to study more. It's not only for electioneering polls, but also to test the temperature of the public on various issues for policy making. But it's a useful addition to our policy process that more of Mr. Dankwa's and what Global Info Analysis is doing becomes mainstream, I think.
Okay. The last question I forgot to ask, 30 seconds. Who is your candidate for the Chief Justice? Bafu Boni, Amadou Tanko,
that's funny because Mami and I have disagreed. I have said that I'll be interested to see Kulendi given the nod. I'm drawn to his thinking on certain things.
Okay, so. I think it may be an unfair question to ask Mami because her mom is also is being gossiped that she may also get it because you need a woman and somebody of a stature to bring the court together.
Thank you for staying.
I'm saying this though. I think it's going to be somebody on the bench originally rather than somebody from outside.
Yeah.
I think that's what
All right. My outfit is by Konati Clothing, 0244-676732. 676732 is a number to call. This has been Newsfile. It's your most authoritative news analysis platform. Thank you to Ayikwe Otu, to Mame Mensa Bonsu, to Nana Bafo, and also to you, Inus Afuseni, and Oliver Bakavonoro. I'm Samson Ladia Yenile. Have a good afternoon. See you next week, God willing.